love those Old Testament stories, don't you? So there's been this question that keeps popping into my head lately. Well, actually, not just lately. Now that I'm not young anymore, the older I get, actually, the more this question bothers me. It just won't leave me alone. And I'm wondering if some of y'all might be the same way. The question is this. Is everything all right? Is everything going to be okay? You know, I find myself asking it all the time. I go to the doctor and I have blood tests, you know, periodically, twice a year. And they say, we'll call you with the result. But what do I do when the phone rings? I know it's them. The first thing I think of is everything okay? Or if Jim, I know, has the doctor's appointment, I'll wait until I know he's had time to get through it, maybe get out and get back in the truck before I call him, and I'll say, Is everything okay? Or if the kids or the grandchildren call, because the world is such a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. First thing I think of is, oh my gosh, I hope everything's okay. When we were on vacation on Ocracoke Island a few weeks ago, all the girls went out to lunch one day. We put on our makeup and, you know, actually put shoes on and went to this nice little restaurant right down the street, walked up there. We were having appetizers, ordered glasses of wine. You know, it was just really, really neat. There was a guy playing guitar. He was not that good, I must say. But for me, anytime anybody offers live music, it's a good thing. So he was playing his different songs, and then all of a sudden he started playing the song, It's a Beautiful World. Y'all, you know what I'm talking about? I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. It's so pretty. And I decided this a long time ago when I heard a guy named John Batiste sing that song, that I wanted that at my funeral. And so we're sitting there at the table, and my daughter-in-law is sitting next to me, and my daughter's sitting next to her. You know, we're just sitting there, and that song comes on, and I say, oh, I love that song. I want them to play that at my funeral. And I'm going to tell you, it was like a fast gun in the Wild West. Those girls pulled out their cell phones and they click, click, click. Now, what's the name of the song? I think they had like an app for mom's funeral. And so I looked around and I thought, ooh, is it, y'all know something that I don't know? And it's not just personal stuff. I mean, I ask it a lot more now than I used to. I saw on the news the other day that not only a U.S. nuclear sub, but the most powerful, advanced, deadly U.S. nuclear sub is pulled into a dock in South Korea. And I heard that had never happened before. You know, just showing strength, just kind of showing off. I know what it is. But, you know, when you see that, it's like, is everything okay? Do they know something that we don't know? Why are they doing that? Or I look at C-SPAN or something on TV where it's showing the House of Congress and it's showing all the lawmakers sitting around in those old chairs and desks that have been there for generations and generations. And you know that the hands of people that have gone before them, just like this pulpit, have rubbed it smooth of the varnish. And I look at some of the faces. Most of them are wonderful faces, but will y'all agree with me when I say I think we have a few folks up there who are playing with a card short of a dead? There they are. And you look at them and listen to some of the things that they're saying, and you think, oh my gosh, is everything okay? Are we going to be all right? Or the weather, like we were talking about earlier, are we going to be okay? Well, the truth is, we cannot know the answer to that question, can we? No one can be sure. Living out our human lives in this world is sort of like Alice in Wonderland. You never know. That what's big seems small, and what's small seems big, and things change right in front of your eyes, and you're left just kind of standing there going, what? It really is like Forrest Gump's mama said, you know, She said, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And that is the truth. Not a one of us knows what tomorrow is going to bring, do we? We don't know what this afternoon is going to bring. We don't know what the next minute is going to bring. I've talked before about my friend Elisa, and I've asked her if she doesn't mind my sharing her story, but it's just a reminder. I mean, Elisa's my hairdresser and friend. We've been knowing each other for 25 years. And she started out thinking her life was going to be just a normal life. Married, she had a daughter. And then her four-year-old son died from cancer. And then her marriage dissolved. You know, you often hear of that happening with all the grief and the difficulty of a situation like that. And then she married too fast and another marriage dissolved. And she married too fast again and another marriage dissolved. And then she had a wreck on her Harley Davidson and almost died. And is still in the process of recuperating and recovering. Now, who would have ever thought that Elisa's life would have turned out like that? But she always amazes me. Her faith is strong and she just keeps on going and keeps on going. But the truth is that we just don't know if everything is okay or not. Like the woman in the story that Tree just read us. She thought she knew that everything was not okay, didn't she? I can't imagine a more despondent sentence in the Bible, that I'm just gathering these little sticks and I'm going to fix this last little handful of flour and this last little handful of oil and my son and I are going to eat it and then we're going to die. And that was really, really depressing. And she thought she knew exactly what was going to happen. That was the end of the story. But something does happen. The story of Elijah. Now, let me just remind you a little bit about Elijah. You know, but I'll just kind of re-trigger it in your mind. Elijah was a prophet. He was from Tish, but he lived in the wilderness. He was one of those John Baptist kind of guys. One of those Moses kind of guys when Moses, you know, encounters the burning bush and God calls him there in the wilderness. Elijah was like a wild man, kind of, you know, just kind of, we call it Renaissance, do it my way. And God called him. God called him to be a prophet. And the first job that Elijah is given, I guess God was just really trying to test him out to see what his mettle really was to go tell King Ahab some rather bad news. Now, let me refresh you on King Ahab. He was one of those kings of Israel. And you remember how the Bible goes, he was a very good king, he was a good king, he was a bad king, he was a bad king, a bad, and then a good king and a bad king for that. Well, Ahab started out being a good king until he married Queen Jezebel. That's right, good work. He married Jezebel, and he allowed Jezebel to sort of take over, you know, wear the pants in the family. That's a can't believe I'm saying that, but that's sort of what he did. Jezebel was not a Jew. She was pagan, and she didn't worship Yahweh. She didn't worship the God that Ahab, who was a Jew, worshiped. But she did worship Baal. Now, we know the God Baal, or Baal, however you want to pronounce it. He was her absolute favorite God, with a small g. And she was determined to have him every place he could appear, like on the billboards and everything we see today. That's how publicity things get going. But she had statues of Baal put in the temple and into the places where people came to worship. Baal was the god of life and fertility. People believed that Baal and another god named Mot battled with each other every 7 years. If Mot won, there was a drought. The crops were bad. It was terrible for 7 years. But if Baal won, there was rain and fertility and everything was good. So God, to say the least, was not pleased about this. Y'all remember that one of the Ten Commandments says, "You shall not put any God before me." "You shall worship no other God." Well, God wasn't kidding when he said that. He really, really, really meant it. God is a jealous God. And the story is that God was so angry that he caused a drought to come upon Israel. And that was a special insult to the god of fertility, the god Baal. So here's this drought coming, and it's Elijah's job to go and tell King Ahab about it. That because he let Jezebel do what she did, that all this was going to happen. So prophet work is dangerous work. It was then and it is today. I stand in the pulpit and say something that, you know, a lot of you don't agree with, but that is God's word. You might take it out on me. I don't like that. Being a prophet is not the easiest thing in the world, but it's important. And so Elijah went to King Ahab and he did what he was supposed to do. He told him there's going to be a drought. It's going to be bad. It wouldn't have happened if he hadn't, you know, how that went. And so after he got through, Elijah had to run for his life because they wanted him. They wanted the messenger. And so he left, but God provided. And God said, go to this certain place where there's a creek running through. You can get your water there. And I'm going to have ravens bring you meat and bread every morning and every evening. Isn't that beautiful? So Elijah's there by the creek, you know, water's still running then. And every morning the raven comes and brings him the bread and the meat. Every evening brings him the bread and the meat, and all is well. Soon the drought came, and the creek dried up. And Elijah began to get a little worried. But God said, no, don't worry. Go to the house of this widow. I'll direct you there, and she's going to take care of you. So he went. But when he got there, what did he see? She was out there picking up those sticks. And she said to him, all I got left is one little handful of flour and a little bit of oil, and I'm getting ready to make it. My son and I are going to eat it, and then we're going to die. And Elijah thought, uh-oh, you know, what do I do now? But what he did made a big difference. He could have walked away and said, okay, I must be mistaken, but he didn't. He continued to talk to the woman. And he said, well, go ahead and make it. Do what you were going to do, but let me have the first bite. And she did. She offered that act of generosity. And behold, because of that, there was a promise born. And each day when she went into the kitchen to see what was there on the cabinet, there was a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil, just enough to make their daily bread. Give us this day our daily bread. And that lasted for weeks and weeks and months and months. And actually, Elijah was probably at the widow's house for a few years until the drought was over. And then when he got ready to leave, a terrible thing happened, something that nobody would ever have expected. The woman's son died. He just died. And this was like a double whammy. You know, it's so painful to have a child who is not able to overcome death. But this woman was in a situation where this son of hers was her only hope. A widow with no children was just doomed to nothing less than maybe prostitution or death or whatever, because she could not take care of herself in any way. And so she's grieving so much because not only is this the end of her son, it's the end of her as well. She didn't have daughters who knew how to flip out those phones and tie them. And Elijah is taken aback too. He says to God, what are you doing? This woman has been so kind and so good. How can you take her son? What in the world is happening? And out of all that grief and love for one another and determination, Elijah simply says, this is not going to be. I believe. And so he actually lays himself over the body of the boy. And after he has prayed and shown his faith and pleaded with God, the boy is alive again. So let's see if we can figure out what this story is teaching us today, okay? There are three main characters. There's God, and there's Elijah, and there's the woman. And so in this story, from God, we learn that even though we can't see God, that God is around as close as our very breath, that
God is always involved in our lives, always. Whether we know it or not, God is aware. God cares about us. We learn from the story that God calls us, that God protects us, that God provides for us, that God is always in the picture, even when we are not acting or thinking or being the person we should be. God is in the living of our lives always. Even this morning, He's in the life of each one of us, working in your life and in my life. That's what we know about God. God is a God who is not going to abandon us. And then from Elijah, we learn that in order for us to experience this working out of our lives by God, we have to be obedient. You know, we have to pay attention. We have to listen. We have to open our hearts and our minds. When God says go, we go. When God gives us nudges, you know, or what's that book? When God winks at us and then we just know it has to be a God thing, we follow. When we read of God's promises, we believe. You know, we don't just take it for granted and say, well, maybe, but we truly believe. We have to be able to grasp the fact that even when we get a piece of chocolate that we don't like, you know, with the yucky, fruity stuff in the middle, we just have to keep on going. We're called to live in hope while we're chewing. Because sometimes it's in the worst of times that God can be made most fully. That in Sunday school this morning. And finally, from the woman. I love this woman. She's got some spunk, doesn't she? We learn that we are called to hospitality. We learn that we're called to open our door and say, come on in. We're called to be generous to others. We're called to care. Remember the scripture that says, sometimes when you welcome the stranger, you are entertaining angels and you don't even know it. What happened? When the widow welcomed in Elijah, she actually welcomed in the divine presence, didn't she? We can't close ourselves off to others without closing ourselves off to God. I'm going to say that again, because I think that's so important. We cannot close ourselves off to others without closing ourselves off to God. Carry that home with you and just, you know, hold on to it. So what's that kind of life look like? That kind of life where we care about others and are open and we trust God and we listen for God's call and we listen for God's protection and we take advantage of the doors that God opens for us. Well, it sort of looks like Rufus Watson. Rufus lived to be 99 years old. He was born in Texas and was the son of former slaves. He grew up as poor as could possibly be. He served his country in the military, and then he went on to pitch in the Negro Professional League. He made a little bit of money in investing in real estate. He witnessed lynchings and spent a lifetime wondering how people could commit such atrocities and still go to church and call themselves Christians. We don't think about that as much as those people who have lived through the atrocities. He found comfort in the story of Elijah and the widow. He said that if his life was not proof enough, this story showed that God meets people.
people at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, that's what he said. That's where God meets us, at the bottom of the barrel. God meets us when we've gone so low that all we can do is look up. See, if Rufus trusted God to meet him at life's low points, and we've all had low points in our lives. Some of us are going through low points right now. If Elijah trusted God to meet him at life's low points, if God met Elijah and the widow and at the point where the flour, oil, and rain were running out, he said, I guess we're all well advised to do the same and to trust God as well. Now, y'all, that doesn't mean that I, and probably you too, are not going to keep on asking that question. Is everything all right? Do they know something I don't know? Elijah probably kept asking it as well. But here's what he also did. And here's what we learned. He also spoke his faith. And he backed up his words with his actions. Let me just end by reminding you that Elijah had a lot more adventures in the Old Testament. I hope you'll read them. You know, in those chapters of 1 Kings, you remember some of those stories. He had that contest and brought the rain down and defeated the god of all. He heard the small, still voice of God in the little breeze. He wound up going to heaven in a chariot, as I recall. He had some really fun times, and those are great, great, great stories. But the place, the last place that we Christians see Elijah is where? High up on the mountaintop. High up on the mountaintop. Remember, Jesus went up there. And he took James and John and Peter with him. And when they got up there, all of a sudden, they saw Jesus. And they saw Moses. And they saw Elijah, the prophet Elijah, all standing there. And they knew that Moses, that they had spoken the truth in love because God had told them to. And that they were chosen to be there on that mountain because they were an exact picture of who God wants us to be. They are illumined. There's this light coming from within them. God is with them. I don't know if you're going to believe what I'm going to get ready to say or not. I hope you will, y'all. That light is available to you and me as well. I'm not saying we're going to light up like a light bulb. I don't think we would want to do that. But God is with us in a way that there will come a time when we don't need to ask that question anymore of, is everything going to be all right? Because it will be all right. Because Jesus has promised, I will wipe away every tear from your eyes. You remember, where does this come from? Revelation. Look at Revelation. I'll wipe away every tear from your eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. So we live in hope, right? We love one another. We are generous to one another. We live in obedience to this God who has given us his Son. We put our trust in him and him alone. And then, as my mother used to tell me, just get up, get your clothes on, go on out there, and remember to whom you belong. The rest, she said, will take care of you. And all God's people say.